Our next speaker is Glenn Aubert, and he will be speaking on the genesis of clay, Limalaya, in golf course soils of Mississippi.
Thank you. All right, thank you for the introduction. I'm going to talk about the genesis of clay lamellae in golf course soils from Mississippi. So this work is currently in press for the journal Catena, and this is one of the chapters of my dissertation at the University of Nebraska. So the soils that we're talking about in this talk are engineered golf course putting green soils. These are sometimes called two-tiered engineered soils because they feature a 30-centimeter layer of sand that sits over a 10-centimeter layer of gravel. The sand is preferable because it drains very quickly after a large rainfall event, and then placing it over the coarser textured gravel creates a zone of preferential water retention in that sand above the gravel, and it provides a consistent depth of wetting fronts when the soil is wetted. So at this interface of sand and gravel, we're seeing layering issues form. So the primary focus of my PhD research is focused on how iron oxide can cement sand together at the interface of sand and gravel in these soils. And so in 2014, a golf course superintendent from Mississippi sent me this picture and said, hey, I think I have this iron layering problem. And it looked really similar to the iron cemented layers that we looked at in the past. But what we found through this research was that these are actually alluvial clay layers and not iron cemented layers. And so we're going to go through that discovery in this talk. So this site was constructed in 2005, and it was amended with a calcined clay soil amendment called Profile. And the layers that had formed in these soils were causing drainage problems that were so severe that they had to completely rebuild the putting greens in 2014. So the soils were less than 9 years old, and they already had to completely rebuild them. So our objectives in this research were to characterize the vertical and lateral distribution of clay, elucidate the source of the clay, and then develop a conceptual model to describe how these lamellae form. We characterized the soil horizons according to soil taxonomy, and then we analyzed each horizon for iron oxides with a citrate dithionite extraction, and then percent clay. So we sampled these soil profiles along a transect of elevation. So the y-axis shows the elevation relative to a reference point. So we use a total stations instrument to shoot the grade. And so profile 1 was the highest elevation, and then profile 2, 3, and 4 were lower in elevation. The x-axis is showing the distance from that reference point laterally. Profile 3 was above a drain pipe. That's important to note. In profile 1, the clay concentration near the surface was relatively low, and it increased with depth. Right above the gravel layer, this spot that's marked with the asterisk shows the location of a lamella, and we had more clay at that horizon, about 1.2%, and then a sharp decrease again into that gravel layer. Now I've added profile 2 and 4 to that same graph, and on the y-axis you see its relative horizon lower boundary depth. So those depths are relative to one another across the landscape there. So profiles 2 and 4 were lower in topographic location, and they also had more clay at that layer just above the gravel layer in the sand, where those lamellae are indicated with an asterisk. So we have some evidence for vertical movement of clay, where it's accumulating at depth. We also have evidence for lateral movement of clay, where it's moving from higher topographic locations to those lower across this putting green. Profile 3 was unique because it was above a drain pipe, and we saw no lamella in this soil profile. So it's possible that just due to that drain pipe being there, water was moving more quickly through the soil profile and was not allowing clay to accumulate at that textural interface. We also analyzed the clay content with and without removal of iron oxides. And what we found was that when we removed iron oxides with a citrate dithionite extraction, we measured more clay in those samples, about 1% more for each sample. So it seems like iron was possibly cementing those clay particles together, and without removing the iron, we were potentially underestimating the clay content. Still though, whether we removed the iron or not, we saw roughly the same distribution of clay in those samples, where we had less at the surface and then an increase just above the gravel layer where those lamellae were located. So this evidence showed us that although there was iron present in these samples and in these soils, these truly were not iron cemented layers. They were not plactic horizons, like we might see in natural soils. These truly were clay layers, or lamellae. So based on those observations, we provided the first description of alluvial clay bands at the sand-gravel interface of two-tiered putting greens. We saw that the clay moves vertically and accumulates where water is preferentially retained. We did not see an accumulation of clay above the drain pipe. We saw that clay moves laterally and accumulates at lower topographic locations. But a big question arises: where did that clay come from? How did these layers form? Well, we came up with three hypotheses to describe how those layers formed. So the first one is that we had translocation of clay that was present in the sand, and that may have been a contaminant during the construction process. It may have been some kind of surface deposition, perhaps aeolian. We can't really hone in on that, but we think that it could be one of those sources. The second hypothesis is that we had the breakdown and translocation of the calcined clay that was used to build those soils. And the third hypothesis is that we had upward movement of clay from the compacted subgrade beneath the gravel layer. This seems unlikely at first because it is going against the force of gravity. We found this interesting paper by Ibrahim and Burras in 2012, and they showed that clay can actually move upwards in sand due to capillary rise. So you could maybe imagine a situation where that gravel layer is fully saturated with water, and if there was some clay that became suspended in that and was wicked up into the sand, it's possible, so we wanted to investigate it. We used X-ray diffraction to characterize the mineralogy of each of these three materials. So we looked at the lamella. We looked at the underlying subgrade beneath that lamella, which was separated by a gravel layer in between those two. And then we also looked at the calcined clay amendment that was used to amend those soils during construction. And what we saw was that while there were some similarities in the mineralogy, there were also key differences that led us to see that these three materials were likely distinct from one another, or that they weren't the same material. We would expect to see some of these, the mineralogy be the same if they were derived from one another. We also use X-ray fluorescence to fingerprint these materials. So each of these materials, you could think of having a unique elemental fingerprint. And so by analyzing those three materials and comparing those fingerprints, we can see how similar they are and try to figure out where the materials came from. We produced mounts of these samples between two pieces of Scotch tape. We did six mounts of the lamella, the calcined clay soil amendment, and the subgrade. And we did three scans per mount, so 18 total scans. There were 4,000 energy levels that the XRF looks at, and we also looked at three different filters within those scans. And so there were 12,000 data points per scan that we could use for comparison. We used discriminant analysis to model differences among those three materials, and then we characterized or separated them into groups. We did discriminant analysis two different ways. We did it with the full spectra, those 12,000 data points per scan, and then we also did it with the elemental results that the XRF gives you, which are from the spectra derived from NIST calibration standards. And what we saw in both cases was that the fingerprints of these three materials didn't match. They appear to be three distinct materials. And it was surprising to see that the discriminant analysis of the full spectra was actually not as tight as with the elemental data, despite having way more data points. Some of the explanations could be that there was noise in those spectra that we were probably analyzing inappropriately. And then we also had way more data points than categories or classes that we were trying to compare. And so that presented issues with that analysis. So based on the X-ray diffraction and X-ray fluorescence analyses, we do not think that those lamellae formed from the breakdown and translocation of calcined clay soil amendments. We also don't think that this was an upward process. We do think that this was a top-down process. The clay did not appear to come from that compacted subgrid beneath the gravel layer. In the future, we want to look at what is the critical clay content required for lamellae to form. The construction recommendations for these soils specify that they should have no more than 3% clay, but we had lamellae with only 2.5% clay, so perhaps we need to change those putting green construction recommendations to allow for less clay to prevent these layers from forming. We also want to investigate what are the interactions between clay mineralogy and irrigation water chemistry. The clay in these lamellae was predominantly kaolinite, a 1-to-1 clay, but how would a 2-to-1 clay respond? What about irrigating with water high in sodium, which could increase swelling and dispersion of the clay and deflocculation? Could that make these lamellae form more quickly? And then finally, the one thing that we didn't characterize here was how these lamellae affect soil physical properties. And that really gets at the key agronomic implications of these layers forming. So micromorphological analysis would be very useful to look at some of those features in great detail. And then we are following up with lab column studies where we're trying to make these lamellae form, and we're measuring air permeability to quantify the changes in pore space from their formation. Something we're really excited about, and we've spent a lot of time working with lately, is approaching experimental pedology using X-ray fluorescence spectroscopy. So we recently built an autosampler stand that can hold 6 columns, and we can program it to move in any way that we want. So for example, we might scan one depth multiple times to get an average of that depth, and then we can program it to scan a column in 2-centimeter increments and do that for all 6 columns. And so basically you can do that, start it, and then leave for 2 hours and come back and it will scan all 6 columns. So it's really something we're really excited about. So we did some preliminary work to see how we could use this to track clay content inside the columns. We chose a sand with a unique chemical fingerprint that was different from a clay. And based on the iron content of that clay, we were able to read the iron content through the wall of the tube and estimate the clay content inside the column. So with this graph that you see right here, we did 10 scans of one depth, and so the column was stationary while we scanned. We scanned it and then moved, so there was 10 stationary scans there. We were able to predict the clay content pretty well with iron as a tracer. But so what we're most excited about is we programmed the unit to actually scan while the columns were rotating. So we have a code that can push the trigger of the XRF, start rotating the column while it's doing the scan, and rotate 340 degrees, stop the scan, and then do it again. So we did that 10 times, and just look at how much tighter the variability is on that graph on the right, and how much the R-squared is much tighter too. So we're really excited to use this technology to kind of give us a new approach to study pedology and soil formation. And this is the only one, the only stand like this that I know of that exists. If anybody's interested in building something like this, let me know, and our instrument shop at Nebraska has indicated that they'll build more of these, so I don't know how much they'll cost. It's going to cost more than what it costs us because they had no idea what they were getting into when they started this project. So, but it was too late, so they had to finish it. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge the United States Golf Association for funding some of this research, Exacto, who I recently started working for, and they've allowed me to come here and are supportive of this work, and then these following individuals who made this work possible. Love to take any questions. Yeah, question? Question was, does that setup interface with a benchtop XRF or an X-ray gun or XRF gun? This one specifically interfaces with our XRF gun because it has a mechanism that manually pushes the trigger. So, but the sky's the limit. If you have a benchtop unit and you have enough money to pay for them to build it, then they could do it. So this one. Well, who wants to build it, right? So, any other questions? Question or comment?
Question about the initial golf course where you said every 9 years they had to reconstruct it. What was the mix in their soil, in their top layer of soil there?
Yeah, the question was, with that golf course initially when they built it, what was the mix of the soil basically? So it was 10% of that calcined clay soil amendment, and then theoretically 90% sand. What we think happened is that there may have been a clay contaminant in that mix, so that was introduced after they tested it and approved it at that 90-10 ratio. So we don't know that percent clay, but it was intended to be a 90-10 mix of sand and calcined clay.
So Glenn, the suspicion is that clay got into those mixes, somehow, and then moved the particular way. It didn't just like magically appear. Somebody put them in there. Whether it was the scrapings from a bucket, as they were grabbing the sand and put it in. You know how these things get done, right? They're not precise as we would like them to be. So is that your suspicion that it was just sort of?
Absolutely.
I'm not a lawyer.
No. Yeah, if everybody heard that, that's our suspicion, is that the clay was introduced into that mixture during the handling process, potentially, or, yes, that's...
If you're going into quality control, they have to place.
Absolutely, yep.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.